Feeling sluggish from all the extra food, drinks, and celebrations? Kick off the new year with a science-backed reset. Quiksilver Scientific's PushCatch Liver Detox is a patented, simple two-step system that supports your liver, gut, and whole body detoxification, helping clear out what's slowing you down so you feel energized for the year ahead. It's more than a cleanse. Quiksilver Scientific's PushCatch Liver Detox helps reset your system. Get 10% off and free shipping at tryqs.com/podcast. Again, that's tryqs.com/podcast for 10% off and free shipping. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
We are back with a live episode of Takedown. Last week we were on demand because I was heading out to Dallas, Texas for an offsite for work, but now I'm back. Paul is here. We're going to talk about Darby Allin, how he's doing 2 weeks into his AEW world title run. We'll talk about the releases, and Paul has a top five of best fits for where he thinks some of that talent, and not only the folks you may be thinking about may land. And then we'll end with Jacob Fatu. I'm interested in Paul's thoughts on if Jacob Fatu is the type of wrestler that WWE could possibly go all the way with, because I've just been impressed with his promo skill. I almost am too impressed, and I talked about this with John LaRocca last night in the Fight Game podcast. I like the edginess and the grunginess and the street of Jacob. He's almost too polished of a promo these days. I'm just like, you know, give me a couple more yada to means, you know. So those are going to be the three things that we hit. Paul's going to help me out here in some of these cases because I'm still trying to catch up from being out last week. I've been listening to my Brian and Dave, so I'm caught up in that way. But when it comes to the television, like, I've watched bits and pieces of stuff, but I've not watched a full show, and that'll get better starting Wednesday.
I'm even further behind than you, Garrett.
The thing is, though, is you're going to catch up and I'm not. Right. So you'll eventually get through it. And I'm just going to skip to Dynamite on Wednesday. And that's when I'll kind of pick everything back up.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I haven't even watched the go home SmackDown for Mania yet. Like, I'm so far behind, but so much has happened. Like, I am up to date on the news.
Because
some of it you just can't avoid. It's funny because I got a text from somebody asking me, is it true that the Wyatt Six got released? And I'm like, I doubt it. And then it was like, and then all of a sudden it was like a deluge. And it was like, and then I'm getting just texts and DMs and everything. Yeah. And still, like, today I was learning of people that were cut last week. So,
yeah, that was a rough one. I think this is two shows in a row for the Friday show with Dave, where as we're doing the show, the releases are coming out.
So, oh, really? Like, wow.
Yeah, he's on his phone. I'm scrolling Twitter and just refreshing, and I'm looking at Sean Ross Sapp's stuff because, you know, he's usually first on all of it. So, yeah, that was a tough one. We're just like,
yeah,
you know,
well, because
discuss it as it's going.
Because I think in some cases, the talent didn't even know. Like, I know of at least one where they found out about it when Sean reported it. Like,
yeah,
normally they like to tell them first, but I guess they didn't get to in some cases.
One of the things that I did watch, though, and it was only because my schedule with John has been a little up in the air of late, so we're not recording in our normal time slot, and then you subbed for him for a couple of those shows that he had to miss, so our schedule's kind of funky. And I was like, you know what? Instead of trying to catch up on Raw, SmackDown, and Dynamite from last week in Collision, I'm going to watch this Hogan documentary because no one has reviewed it. And so that's what I did last night. Mm-hmm. John and I reviewed it, and I put the video of it on our YouTube channel here on the Fight Game channel. So it's up there if you want to see it was like a 28-minute conversation. But are you planning to watch this Hogan thing?
Oh, yeah. I watched most of the first episode earlier today. And actually, when we're done, here, I'll probably watch another, you know, probably get through the second episode. But I was looking for something to watch on Netflix anyways, and that just came out. So I figured I'll watch that. And I got a few other things in the watch list, but I figured I might as well watch that since it just came out. And so far, it's just, you know, it's your standard A&E doc, you know, from what I've seen so far. But I gather it's going to get a little more in depth. And, you know, I got my BS detectors on. There was a whopper that I heard about a half hour in that I was, you know, it's not a big deal, but it's just like, it's one of those things that they, you know, I think, I don't know if Hogan, this is one where I think Hogan actually believes his lie. You know, there's sometimes,
or he's just told it so many times that he just really forgets what the truth
is. Well, this is one I hadn't heard before. So I feel like he does believe it, but it's just so preposterous that like, I wasn't even there and I know it's a lie.
Well, what one was it?
It was him saying that they brought him in to be a babyface in that first run in WWF, and then he was against DiBiase, and the fans booed him. And DiBiase was a babyface at the time, and he was managed by Freddie Blassie, like he was a heel, like you know. And even DiBiase's like, oh yeah, you know, I was a bad guy, and they booed him, and you know. And then he goes on and cuts a like a promo that. You know, it was supposed to be a baby face, but they booed him. And I'm listening to this promo, and there's no way this was a baby face promo. Like,
yeah, you know. Yeah, I mean, a lot of that stuff is, I think, what you said, which is,
yeah,
he just doesn't realize, or he doesn't have a great memory. Dave and Brian talked about one as well the other night where he was saying he was like 12 years old watching Dusty, and he's not even that much younger than Dusty enough to be, you know, the one that I mentioned with John that was, I thought was just the most ironic, but at the same time, just so Hogan, is he's talking about the going on Arsenio to do the steroid stuff. And so he's like, yeah, you know, I'd been taking steroids since I was like in high school. And, you know, I shouldn't have gone. If I could do it again, I wouldn't say that or whatever. And in the same sentence where he's admitting that he lied on Arsenio, he then says, I'm the one who got Arsenio the job. So he's cleaning up one lie and then giving another lie all at the same time.
That's rich. Yeah, Hogan had all a stroke with those Fox execs back in 1990.
Well, Arsenio was a Paramount show, and it was syndicated, so it was all just
affiliate. Oh yeah, right. Yeah.
So I don't know what affiliate Hogan would have had, you know, access to, whatever. But there's stuff like that all over the doc, and I know there was a lot of conversation about Paul, Triple H saying, you know, if it wasn't for Hogan, you know, we could have gone down like roller derby or whatever. And the context of that comment is Hogan had just died. And so they were just trying to celebrate him during that moment. So he, you know, they were about to do the TV show, and Triple H is like, if you don't want to stand on the stage, you don't have to, we're going to do the 10 bell salute. And all the old dudes were there, Jimmy Hart and Brian Blair and Hacksaw and those guys, and they were just, you know, all sad. And so that was the moment of Triple H just saying, like, you know, this is a, even though maybe he's fallen out of favor, he still did all of these things. That was kind of the context in those conversations. So it's just, you know, when it comes to this stuff, the lack of facts really hurt it, and they didn't have the Dave to refute. Like the McMahon doc, like the Mr. McMahon doc, Keith Elliott Greenberg and David Shoemaker were there a little bit, but that wasn't really their role. David Shoemaker did it a little bit, but there was no fact checker. There was no Hogan fact checker.
Now Greenberg is like one step above like Sam Roberts.
Yeah, you know, he's a gimmick himself, but he at least he has some history knowledge. But he's a gimmick himself.
Well, he's on all the docs and always spinning the, you know, whatever the WWE party line is. Like, you know, that's
what. And then when AEW needs him to write a book, he'll spin the AEW stuff. Yeah, so that's good for him. He keeps getting paid.
He's a Bill Apter of the 2020s.
Keep getting them checks.
Yeah,
KEG. Mm-hmm. All right, let's hit it up right now. Let's start with the first topic, which is you wanted to talk about how Darby Allin is doing. And I know there was a Dynamite number that came out from last week's show that was not good. I am not a Nielsen home, but I didn't get to watch it. Not that, you know, I don't know if it was, you know, that the playoffs or the West Coast or whatever, but that they did do a lesser number than they'd been doing.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the playoffs, I mean, NHL and the NBA, and then, yeah, the earlier start time. The early, I mean, on the West Coast, like, that usually affects them somewhere between 5 and 10%. One thing I did notice was they were down, Impact was down, Collision was down, and my first thought was, oh, maybe it's the, maybe Nielsen adjusted again, you know? But I don't think that's it. I think the other two were, or the other three were because of the NFL draft. Like that was, you know, that was mm-hmm. Thursday, Friday, Saturday. So that explains that. And then with Dynamite, you know, obviously the start time affects it, the playoffs, but you know, this was one of their lowest numbers of the year. And you know, or since they adjusted the everything that they're doing in January. So I think, like, you know, it's 2 weeks, but I don't know. Like, we talked about the Darby thing last week, and I hadn't seen it yet. I'd heard about it. I hadn't finished watching the pay-per-view, and I hadn't watched the title change. And I'm not a huge fan of the way they did it. Like, mm-hmm. you know, there was good parts to it. Like, you know, it was an interesting story that they told, you know, with, you know, MJF being surprised and everything, but it kind of made it almost like comedy. And then, you know, and it's Darby, and I'm not opposed, you know, John said the same thing, and I actually heard Dave say pretty much the same thing. Like, I'm not opposed to Darby Allin being the AEW world champion. I, in fact, you know, 2 years ago, I was pretty sure it was going to happen, but mm-hmm. like right now just did not feel like the right time. And it's not like the fans were clamoring for it. You got a good reaction in Everett, but not like an all time memorable, you know, like you would have expected. Like it was a nice pop, and I don't think people were expecting it. Although, you know, word had gotten out and stuff that, you know, there might be a title change. So, you know, I think people maybe were, I don't think they were expecting it the way it happened. So when he, you know, when he low blows him and hits him with four straight coffin drops and then does a step over takeover, like, you know, it's like, is it really going to happen? Oh my God, it happened. We have a new champion. And, but then, you know, like last week he has his first title defense and it does like the lowest number in 2.5 months. And
how much of that may have been Ciampa?
That might be part of it too. Although Ciampa, if you look at Ciampa's big matches, they've been on shows that have done really good numbers. Like the first Collision that did a great number was like his debut. And people were joking, oh yeah, Ciampa's a draw. And I'm like, yeah, it's not Ciampa, it's something else. And but then like every time he was in a big match, the show did a good number. So, you know, I can't like, I'm not saying Ciampa's the reason that their ratings turned around. But I also can't blame, I can't say, oh, Ciampa's not a marquee opponent. But I do think like it's a cold match and mm-hmm. like no build. And, you know, yeah, they announced it, you know, I think on Collision. He got a win the week before. So it was like, it's not like he didn't deserve it. But I think this is what Darby's title matches are going to be. Like, I just have a feeling he's going to defend the title every week on TV until he loses it. And he's not going to hold it for very long. That's my gut. I mean, he's defending against Brody King tomorrow night, and I don't expect him to lose. Although that's the other thing with Darby. Like, a champion like Darby should be the kind of person that people would tune in because you always think, oh, maybe we could get a title change tonight. But mm-hmm. I think AEW fans are smart enough to know, like, we're probably not going to get another title change, you know, this quick. Although I do think that a lot of people will be expecting a title change on the next pay-per-view. Whether or not it happens is another story, but you know, whoever he's going to defend again, I assume it's going to be MJF, but yeah. So I just like, and then the ticket sales, like they've been okay, but not great. They're down this quarter compared to quarter two of last year. I saw, I was reading Thurston's update today. Not a lot. They're down like 8%, but you know, it's, they're not up. You know, this week, I think they're up. They're in Virginia. I wonder if people are expecting Hangman back. Mm-hmm. You know, and that could be a reason for ticket sales.
That would be one that I would promote if it was going to happen.
Yeah, and see, and they don't seem interested in promoting. Like even that world title match. It's the other thing with that world title match last week, or the week before, like 2 weeks ago. I watched the pay per view, and I saw the promo that Darby did, but it's like a kind of just in one ear out the other. I knew he was challenging. I actually knew he had won, but I didn't realize they actually announced the match. I don't think they actually like put up a graphic for the match. So like, unless you're super paying attention and dialed in on social media, I don't think you even knew that Darby was challenging for the title. I listened to Brian and Vinny, and they didn't know. They were at the show and they had no idea until they got home that Darby.
If they were at the presser, I think he said it at the presser.
Sure. Yeah. But I mean, who's watching the presser? Like, you know, I mean, it probably gets 100,000 views, but I don't think those 100,000 people, it's not like 100,000 people watching on TV. I mean, the word gets out, and I'm sure a good portion of their fans knew, but it's not the kind of thing where it's attracting casual fans that, you know, check in every once in a while for Dynamite. And it's like, oh shit, Darby's going to win the title tonight. Like, I don't think there was that buzz at all. Although, you know, I think for hardcore fans that watch every week anyways, yeah, they knew, but yeah, it's not the kind of thing, you know. And even the Foley thing, you know, people have compared it to, like, that one. I mean, they had a week of build and then they had the competition promoting it for them. So that was cool.
It was a taped show.
Yeah, it was a taped show. And Tony Schiavone was nice enough to say, hey, Mick Foley's going to win the title. Switch the channel. Yeah.
You know what I was thinking? I wish I trusted these ratings a little bit more, because I would wonder if you put the belt on Darby, or even on in the Rise, where you're looking at his quarters and stuff. And I would wonder if those younger viewers were going up a little bit, like, you know, thinking of what, why would Tony Khan do this right now? He's there's a reason for him doing it. It's not just because Darby's a nice guy.
I think this was his plan, probably going back about probably when MJF won the title. I would think that whenever they booked this show in Everett, I'll bet you that he had it earmarked. Darby's going to win the title here. That's my guess. You know, haven't watched Tony Khan for 7 years.
Sure. But what were the analytics that said that this would be a good idea?
I don't know.
If we had quarter hours.
Yeah.
Maybe you see something in his segments.
Well, they do. I think they do. Because Dave.
Yeah, that's why I'm wondering. Like, maybe there's something in the data that we're not seeing where Tony Khan's like, oh, this would be a nice experiment to put the belt on him. Maybe we get younger. Maybe we get a little bit more female viewership. Maybe we get, you know, a different kind of fan than we're getting. Like, I don't know what that is.
Or could it just be as simple as we need to teach our fans that a title can change hands on television? So, you know, like, maybe they'd noticed that they weren't getting increases for world title matches because people assumed that there wasn't going to be a title change. So this way they teach their fans. And so the next time they have a big world title match, maybe more people will tune in because they expect there could be a title change.
Yeah. The one that I was comparing it to, I know you said Mick Foley, I was thinking Jeff Hardy.
Oh yeah. Yeah. There
was that time where Dave was saying that, you know, Jeff Hardy might be even more popular than John Cena as a babyface with this fan base. And, you know, Jeff Hardy would always kind of shoot himself in the foot, and you could never really trust him to do business. So he wouldn't hold top spots for very long. And Jeff Hardy was way more popular at that time than Darby is today. Just the viewership is a little bit different. So I was like thinking, like, well, I wonder if this was a little bit more of a lean towards what WWE thought back in 2008 or whenever that was, 2009, when they did put one of the belts on Jeff Hardy for that short period of time, because Jeff Hardy, I'm sure, drew a much different fan than John Cena did, even though John Cena kind of drew that casual fan that you're talking about. Hardy's fans, I'm going to guess, without going back and reading Dave's reporting, I'm going to guess it was probably a little bit more female, a little younger, just a different demo. And maybe we're going to see that with Darby. The problem is, like you're saying, or what you expect, we're probably not going to have a lot of data for the sample, because it's probably not going to, he's not going to be champion for very long.
No, but I mean, he might get, you know, 5 or 6 title defenses in, you know, in the next month and a half. So yeah, that'd be an interesting question for Dave, though. Like, maybe when you do a show with him, because he's probably got some of those numbers. So he may be able to have a look and see.
I feel like if that was the truth, though, he would probably state that.
Gotcha. And he's been pretty,
probably my guess,
from what I've heard. And again, I haven't listened to any of the Observer since Mania. I'm actually just on the Mania Observer radios. And I would think that, yeah, Dave's been pretty like, I don't know if this was a good idea. Like, you know, it's kind of the take I'm getting from him. Although it looks like he loved that Ciampa match. So maybe he's changed his mind.
Well, I think they liked a lot of the Ciampa match, but he also thought, and Brian also thought the same thing of all of these matches, which is there's a point in the match where you're just like taken out of it a bit because of the craziness.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you start thinking about, is this guy going to kill himself rather than is he going to win this match?
Well, I almost wonder if that's like, Fernando made the comment that Tony just likes Darby. Maybe that's the reason he did it. But I almost wonder if it's like, Tony wants Darby to be the world champion, and maybe he's like, he knows like this guy can't do this forever. So I should probably give him the title while I can, because, you know, a year from now, you know, who knows, you know, like he could, you know, like take one too many falls, you know, like, you know, have fingers crossed. Hope that doesn't happen, obviously.
Yeah. But yeah, it does seem like he's constantly playing with fire.
Yeah. And at some point you get burned, or you know, and again, like he may just, at some point, he may decide, yeah, no, I want to go, you know, whatever, climb another mountain, Kilimanjaro.
So, next time. we probably don't have enough information to say whether this is a success or not a success. But what I can say, I think definitively, is the reason for MJF to not be the champion right now, like Tony has a reason. My preference as a fan is I would like MJF to still be the champion. What I've seen from Darby so far has not changed my mind that MJF should still be the champion.
At the very least, I think I can say it's not, I can't find a positive reason for it. I can't 100% say it was a negative. At best, I can say it's neutral, but you know, I mean, there's some evidence that it might be a negative. I'm not prepared to say that yet, but I definitely don't see anything about it that was a positive in terms of their business. At least yet. I mean, and again, things can change. Maybe tomorrow it's going to do 800,000 and a 0.2, and then
that'd be great.
Yeah,
that'd be freaking tremendous. And then it's just like, okay, maybe we
Tony
can
was on something.
This dude. Yeah. Okay, let's talk about the cuts, the WWE cuts that were happening. And I know you have some spots for folks.
Yeah.
And I got to be good landing spots for them.
I went through the list, and I mean, there's a lot of names, and man, like there's a few of them. Like even today, like when I was looking at it, I didn't even know. And I can't say I was surprised by most of them. You know, they're the kind of names that, like, in a lot of cases, you probably didn't even realize they still work there. And there's a few names on here that, you know, I'll get to, and I'll say, you know, like why they didn't necessarily make the cut of my top five. But my number one, and this is again one that I just found out about today. I'm sure a lot of other people knew about it, but again, I'm not 1,000% caught up with the news. Santos Escobar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which is odd because his contract ran out, and then there was rumored he was gonna go to AEW or CMLL or both. Mm-hmm. And then WWE signed him, paid him a ton of money, and then didn't use him. And then finally they bring him back to AAA, and immediately he gets hurt. And then he gets cut, which, really weird. But I think that's a guy, that's a valuable dude. And I think CMLL should sign him up, you know, ASAP. Because I think the CMLL fans will appreciate him and his gimmick and his family heritage a lot more than the AAA fans do, which at this point right now is mainly just WWE fans. And I think he'll have some value in the US as well. You know, obviously he speaks English very well. He's got a great look. He's older, but he doesn't wrestle like he's old, and he doesn't look as old as he is. So, you know, he could have another 10 years in a really strong position.
I think Sean reported today that CMLL was expecting him to sign with them before he came back to WWE.
Okay. And they, no hard feelings, hopefully.
Who knows?
Yeah. I mean, I get the impression that his contract was like maybe like 750 grand. And like, you know, if you get offered that kind of money, like even if you wanted to go to CMLL, like it's kind of hard to turn that down. Mm-hmm. So yeah, if, you know, as long as they have no hard feelings, that's my number one out of all these names. Number two, I've got the Motor City Machine Guns. I think they should go to AEW and ROH. You know, they could almost be in more of like a player coach role, but I think there's still probably another 5 years of, you know, solid in-ring work that they could do. They're younger than people think they are. Like, I think they're early 40s. You know, and they've got that long history in ROH, so Tony can capitalize on that. They get matches with the Young Bucks, FTR, the Rascals, you know, you know, a lot of other teams, Edge and Christian, and they can go to ROH, probably like be their tag team champions, you know, again, with the long history there, and work with some of those younger talents that they have over there and bring some of them up. So I think that's a natural, and I wouldn't be surprised. Like, I assume it's a 90-day no compete. So, I mean, probably get them around All In, you know, hopefully. And I hope they go there because they got the 1 year in WWE, probably made a lot of money and maybe, you know, check the box. And it's unfortunate because I thought they did a really good job in WWE and they got over and they had some of the best tag team matches over the last year in the company. But they just, that division was basically ignored. And it's funny because now I hear the Street Profits are back and they probably will start trying to push the tag team division again. But there's a great team and they had another great team that they demolished, DIY. They let Ciampa go. So, you know, like that division is a lot less interesting than it was a year ago, in my opinion.
Do you think that Tony just recently bringing in the Rascals, you think it's just too much of these smaller working tag teams for that roster?
I mean, I should say yes, but I don't know. I don't think you could have too many. Like the way Tony books, like I think he'll just sign whoever he wants. I mean, at this point, and you know, and the people that he, you know, it's like it's like he's signing all these talents, and then the ones he's not using, they just get pushed down the pack. And
well, that's what I'm thinking. Like, I'm thinking someone like Top Flight. Like Top Flight's just gonna take another step backwards.
Yeah, who cares? I mean,
where's Private Party?
Well, they brought. Well, I think one of them's injured. So, but then they did a promo, like the other one, the one that's not injured. I think it's Isaiah that's still healthy. He did a promo on Collision a couple weeks ago, and he said, "Yeah, you know, my partner's injured, but I'm still here." And I thought, okay, they're going to do a singles push with him, and we haven't seen him. So maybe he's on ROH. I don't know. I watch ROH, but again, I'm a couple weeks behind. So, but yeah, like I think Tony's just he'll take the, if a top talent that he thinks he can do something with is available, he's going to sign him. And you know, because you know, there's injuries, there's things happen, there's people get unhappy, you know, whatever. And even, you know, if he's got too many people, oh well. Oh, Lady B just brought up a good point that there's, oh yeah, there is a show. There's two shows in Detroit coming up that they just announced. Actually, Dynamite and a Collision in, I think, August. So there you go.
There you go. That'd be a good place for them to show.
Oh, yeah. Motor City, baby. So yeah, they're my number two. My number three, Alba Fire. Yeah, like that lady is talented. The former Kaylee Ray, I always get her and Kylie Ray mixed up. And I assume she'll go back to that or, you know, whatever her real name is, or maybe that is her real name. I don't know.
You know, this show is called Takedown because we try and be, you know, pretty decisive about things. And John LaRocca had a pretty hot take last night. He said Alba Fire would, if she joined the AEW roster, she would be the best female wrestler, even better than Mercedes Moné on day one.
I'm not sure I would agree with that, but definitely top five, if not top three. Like Mercedes better. I can't, you know, if you're talking total package, if you're just talking in ring,
he's just talking in ring.
Oh yeah. Well, it's hard to say.
I still would take Mercedes, but I
would
understand.
Take Mercedes for a lot of other reasons than the in ring.
Well, I understand his point in that she's better than people realize, and that would be the place to go.
Well, and not just the in-ring. She's very good at everything else. She's got a great look. She'll take garbage and make it good. Not that AEW would give her garbage, but that gimmick she had with Chelsea Green was, I mean, that was a death gimmick, and she made it work. You know, and Chelsea too. I was surprised. I was really surprised by that one. You know, I know a lot of people are surprised. Kairi Sane's not on my list just because I don't think she's even, if she goes anywhere, it's probably going to be somewhere in Japan is my guess. Like, I don't think she's even available necessarily for AEW. Although I do expect her to show up at some point in AEW, but maybe not full time. Like, I assume she'll probably go back to Stardom, and they're kind of off my radar. So that's why I don't necessarily think, but if you're a Stardom fan, you should be really excited that you might be getting her back. Cause I think that's where she's going to end up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. What's number four?
Number four. And so my number four and number five are similar, but I'll start with number four. And it's Trill London. Now, most people aren't going to know who this is. No, you don't. But I did send you a video of his like about 6 months ago. This guy is a combination of Javon Evans and Jeff Hardy. And his promo style and his in-ring. He lists Jeff Hardy as an influence. He like tries to be him. He's from he was on LFG, and he was also on 205, or I think he was on the tail end of like 205 Live, and also, or whatever the follow-up, Level Up, and then Evolve. He did a couple appearances there. I was shocked that they released this guy. Like, shocked. I looked at him. I had the same reaction to him as I had the first time I saw Javon Evans. Like, I was like, this guy is can't miss. And he's good in the ring. He's a former NFL player. Mm-hmm. And I think he was a cornerback. A lot of speed, not a huge guy. Obviously using the comparables that I gave, but I think that's a guy that, you know, they could probably get an AEW or maybe even a TNA, can get cheap and develop. Mm-hmm. And if he ends up in AEW, like he could be like a Kevin Knight. Like he's got
why did charisma. WWE cut him?
I have no idea. And that's what, like, maybe there's something I don't know. And that's going to be the same thing with my number five. Like, there could be reasons, but there's nothing I've heard. Like, it might just be they're looking at these names and it's like, oh, well, we're not using him. Okay, let's cut him.
Plus, they have incoming folks, so.
They do, at a lot. And if you look at, like, I was not surprised that they made all these cuts because I watch everything. And, you know, you can see, like, okay, starting with Evolve, like, there's people that left Evolve. Either, you know, like, they went up to NXT. Or, you know, that's it. They went up to NXT. There's NXT people that were called up to the main roster. There's people that they're bringing in off the indies that they're putting on TV right away, which they haven't done, you know, like a Starboy Charlie, Dorian Van Dukes, this Tristan.
The Starboy Charlie one cracks me up.
Yeah.
Cause I'm trying to think of the time frame. So there were some shows that Brian Alvarez came out here in the Bay Area, for Marcus Mack, and John was booking it, the Daily City show. And Starboy Charlie was like the little guy in the opening matches back then. And so think of that. It's probably like 6 or 7 years ago at this point. Same time I met.
Maybe longer. Yeah, I think it's I think you're talking pre-AEW.
Same time frame where I met Chris Christopherson, who was there to support his son, Jody Christopherson.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah, that was like 2018.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
And so to see Starboy Charlie on NXT, and I'm like, wait a second. Like, this guy was too small to wrestle for Bay Area independent wrestling, for All Pro Wrestling, and now he's in NXT. I thought that was the wildest thing.
Yeah, and then, like, this, you know, and some of these guys, like, I'd heard about Dorian Van Dukes. I think his name used to be Mike DiVecchio or something like that. I'd heard the name, but I'd seen him maybe once or twice. I've watched a few WXW shows. This Tristan Angels, I'd never seen him before. He's like kind of reminds me a little bit of Kerry Von Erich. Like, he's a little bit smaller, but, you know, he's from the UK, and he's just got this incredible look, like Matt Riddle-ish, you know.
Wait, who's your number five?
So my number five is a similar guy, Chris Island, who is, another Trill London. Now, the difference with Chris Island is he's done even less on, like, Evolve and everything. He was on LFG, but, like, I think he wrestled once on Evolve. But he was great on LFG. Like, he stood out, as a promo guy. And he's also an accomplished amateur wrestler that I was surprised. He was amateur wrestling in college, like, in 2024. So that's like two years ago. So this guy is, like, young, and he's, like, you know, there's something there. So if Tony signs him and just lets him work in ROH and maybe puts him on Dynamite every once in a while to have a match that he's going to lose, you know, just to get his name out there, or, you know, maybe goes to New Japan and joins their dojo or something like that. Like, this guy is something that, that I think out of all these people that got cut, like if I'm looking at 5 years down the road, like I think these last two, Trill London and Chris Island, like these might be the guy that you kind of look at and how did WWE let these two guys go? And if you don't know who they are, and I'm sure most people listening don't, Google them and just look at them. Like, you know, and then listen to the Google a Trill London promo and you'll be like, wait, why did the, like, this Trill London is a better promo than 90% of the people in AEW. Like, this guy's got it. Like, I'm shocked that WWE cut him. So maybe there's like attitude reasons or something. Maybe they didn't think he was picking it up enough. Like, I don't know. But I also have a feeling that he's just going to be one that, you know, they're going to look at and say, wait a minute, what do we do? You know, so yeah, so those are my guys. And I left a lot of like interesting names off, you know, like I know everyone's talking about Tyra Mae Steele, and I'm sorry, but I've been watching her and she's gotten worse every time I've seen her. Like, I don't know if it's her. I don't know if it's that system that beat her down, what it is. And I'm not writing her off. Like, maybe she'll, you know, can recoup. But I think with her, like, she's a little bit older too. But she's obviously an incredible natural athlete, probably one of the best out there. So I certainly, you know, wouldn't be surprised if somebody picks her up. But she also maybe look at, like, I don't really want anything to do with this business anymore. Like, sometimes people go through WWE and they come out thinking like that. In fact, I'd say most, you know, like when they come in through the NIL program.
What about Black?
I guess he could show up like a New Japan or something. I don't think Tony would touch that guy with a 10-foot pole. And Zelina Vega, same thing. Like, she's good. Like, I actually just watched what I assume was her last match in WWE, and it was like pretty good with Jordan Grace on main event. Like, they had like a 3.5-star match.
I think I was walking in to SmackDown when that match was going on.
Oh yeah, that was San Jose. Yeah, it was a good match. Like, got great crowd reaction, and little did she know. Maybe she knew. I don't know. That was before me.
No, she didn't know. That was the whole thing. Is she was on her Twitch stream, I think.
Oh, when she found out.
And she found out, and she was all mad at Sean for spoiling her news or something, I think.
Oh, okay. So yeah, that and I'm more surprised that they signed him back in the first place than I am that they cut him. And with Zelina, like, I just kind of assumed at some point she was going to get cut. Like that's another one, like Apollo Crews. Like, I could see AEW signing him, and, you know, he could be in that, you know, like ROH collision, you know, like never-ending spiral. He's never going to go anywhere, but he's going to have good matches, and it's a name people are going to recognize. He'll go back to being Yuha Nation, I assume, you know, when he's, you know, maybe back on the indies. That's a talented dude. 10 years on the main roster. I was at the Raw when he debuted, and at that time I said it's too early for him and he's not going to do well. Like,
NXT legend.
Yeah, he debuted the same day as Baron Corbin. And he lasted a hell of a lot longer than Baron Corbin. So, but I'd say Baron Corbin had the more memorable WWE career anyways, cuz
yeah.
He had the most memorable. He had the US title when he had was it Aba Tunbe or whatever behind him, and, you know, doing the Nigerian prince gimmick. Yeah.
Okay. So let's switch gears to our last topic here, which is about Jacob Fatu. It's still a little bit of like a fever dream to me because I know, not that I know him.
I know directly. You're a noose.
I'm a noose, but I've just been watching him for a while, right? He's like the Bay Area dude who is on the indies, has a ton of talent, who in the past, you know, maybe WWE was a little bit scared of because of, for whatever reason. But now he's like corporate Jacob Fatu a little bit because he's so perfect for what they do. And, I just wonder, is this his level, like facing Roman Reigns at Backlash? Could you see a situation where they go all the way with Jacob Fatu?
Right now, I don't think so. the funny thing is, I did have someone text me and say, am I crazy that I want Jacob Fatu to win the title or to win at Backlash? And I, and again, I'm behind on the TV, so I didn't actually know what he was talking about. And I'm like, well, no, you're not crazy. What's the match? And then he's like, oh, you haven't seen? So he didn't want to spoil it for me, so he didn't tell me. But I kind of assumed it was probably Roman. Yeah, like, I mean, I think they got bigger plans for Roman, but I do think that he'll win the championship at some point. Could they go all the way, like make him a Roman, Cody, Punk level? I don't know. Like, he's certainly talented enough. But I think, like, right now, the priority's probably got to be Oba, like, for a lot of reasons. But, you know, they got two brands. And, you know, Fatu could certainly carry one of them if they thought he was ready. So this will be a big test. Like, I think the way that match goes, like, I can't imagine a world in which he wins. But if they have a long match and it's competitive and there's some believable near falls, and then you'll know, okay, they're serious and they're getting people ready for it. But if it's just, you know, like your standard match, like, you know, like, is he going to be Kevin Owens? You know, like where, you know, yeah, he can get up to that level to where he challenges Roman Reigns, but he's never going to beat him. Or is it going to be more like you can see, okay, no, this is Cody. You know, like at some point he's going to win. I think we should be able to tell by how that match goes next weekend. It's already next weekend, eh?
Yeah, it's already next weekend.
I don't expect
a week and a half from now.
I don't expect him to beat Roman Reigns this early. But when you do the roster math and you go, okay, you got Roman, you got Cody, you got Punk, you have Gunther. Those are like the tippy top four guys. Randy Orton is kind of right there, depending on how much he's going to actually wrestle. You have the guys, like you just said, Oba. I failed to mention Seth. Seth is also in that group. You got Oba. You got Bron Breakker.
Yeah, it's another one.
You got Trick. I think Jacob fits with those guys, but he's also on the older end of those guys. And I don't think people see him as a young guy necessarily because he's been with WWE for like a year and a half now.
Yeah.
So it just seems like there's a lot of guys in front of Jacob if they were to give him the ball. And it doesn't mean he's got to be the top star in the entire company. I'm just thinking, would they actually have faith in him to give him a tippy top match at WrestleMania? Who knows what would have happened if he didn't have the surgery with the mouth surgery that he had to do last year at some point, because it looked like something was going to happen for him and then he was just out for a little while. Whether or not that was with Drew, because there was the Drew Cody mix, and so I don't know what was going to happen there, but you know, Drew's another one who he's going to be gone. But when he comes back, he's going to be probably a little bit above Jacob.
So that actually, it's funny you just mentioned him, because that's the guy I realized, like, that's probably his ceiling is Drew. Like, whatever level Drew got to and even where he still is. And that's not a bad place to be. Like, that is right below the tippy top guys. That is, it was a little bit below Seth, but, you know, above, like, 95% of the roster. And I could see, like, if Randy Orton beats Cody, I could see Jacob Fatu being the guy to beat Randy Orton. You know, maybe like just after SummerSlam, like around that time frame, and then hold it into the Royal Rumble, like that kind of thing. Like, I could see that. I'm not necessarily saying I would predict it, but I could definitely see it happening.
Here's a hot take for you.
Okay.
Jacob Fatu could be everything WWE wished Jey Uso was.
Oh yeah. 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 I agree with that. He's not as over as Jey was at his peak, but there's more there that should make whatever level he's at or gets to more sustainable than it was for Jey. Cause he's worlds better in the ring. Like, you know, it's not even comparable.
I also think he's a way better promo, and I think he's better in the media spaces. Now, he is not conventional suit wearing buttoned up Cody. He's not extravagant good morning football Seth Rollins.
But he might get you on some of those shows that none of those guys could ever do. You know, like there, the kind of stuff that Swerve does for AEW. Like I could see.
And Trick. Trick is going to be doing a lot of that stuff too.
Yeah.
But he's got that edge to him, and he kind of fits in to some spaces that, you know, they might be interested in him if they kind of lean that direction that I think could be really, really interesting.
And he could also have that kind of appeal that people would have for, like, I don't know what the word is, like underdog-ish, you know, like the kind of appeal where people got behind, like I'll say the name of Kevin Owens, a Mick Foley, like not your typical, you know, like 6'4", 260 pounds, you know, like built out of granite. Like this is more like your brawler. Like I'm not saying Jacob Fatu looks like every man, because he's definitely does not, but he looks different from your typical WWE superstar. And people like different. And he's got the unique background, and he's got the, you know, the rags to riches story behind him, and you know, and he's told it, which is key, you know. So he's a guy that, you know, you can kind of pull for. You know, he was in a bad space and he pulled himself out of it and he made it to WWE and he's a big star now. And I think people like that story. And they can lean into it. If he gets a big push, they can tell that story more in depth. And you know, with the WWE promotional machine behind him, yeah, I mean, they could go a long way with him if they want to.
I think, like you said, the way that they handle this match with Roman will be very telling.
Yeah.
Gotta imagine the twins get involved in some way.
Yeah, one way or the other. Or, you know, maybe they're just there to make sure nobody else gets involved. You know, and you, so you could have that. You could have like a Drew McIntyre return or something, and you know, like try to get involved, and then they stop him. You know, and you know, whoever else Roman's next opponent's going to be, like, it could be something like that, where, you know, like the family reunites as a result of this match.
And you know what? They will never do this, but these guys have history together. They know each other. They've wrestled in the same area. They've wrestled each other. You put Jeff Cobb and Jacob Fatu together, that would be tremendous as like a duo, or even as a tag team.
Yeah.
These two powerhouse dudes, you know, from different backgrounds. I think it would be awesome, but they have
speaking of powerhouse, I mean, they could also do that with Royce Keyes.
They could do it with Hobbs. Yeah. They could do that with Hobbs for sure.
Yeah.
So there's so much opportunity with a lot of these guys who are kind of in the middle or the upper middle that are kind of fresh, like is going on in the chat, kind of talking about fresh guys. And then you got the newer guys like Trick and Braun and such. And so there's like, that's the most interesting part of WWE to me right now, is kind of the bubbling middle and the upper middle. Cody's great. Gunther's great. Punk is great. Roman's great. I've seen those guys more times than I really need to in my lifetime, right? I want to see the guys right underneath them and where they go. That's what I'm interested in WWE right now.
And what's exciting is if you listen to what, you know, some of the power brokers in WWE say, like in some of these interviews and everything, it's pretty clear that one of their goals is to get some new faces up there and involved in that main event mix. So that's where it's a really good time to be any of those guys you just mentioned. Because, you know, like you look at Mania, like they did a good job at Mania of getting some of this new talent over. You know, whatever you felt about night one in specific, I think universally people like night two, but you know, like they, you know, like, I mean, the Oba thing couldn't have gone better. Trick could have gone better, but it went pretty well. Javon stood out on ESPN. I think that was a goal. Bron Breakker came back and made an impact, you know, and then the night after, I haven't seen it yet, but I understand there's a lot of cool stuff that happened on Raw. So, you know, or maybe I've been led to believe that, and it's not going to be the case. I'll see when I watch it.
one little last small tiny one.
Yeah.
Are we going to see the resurgence of Rhea Ripley as like the ultimate top person in the women? Like, cause she didn't really take a back seat last year, but she was doing a lot of tag team stuff. You know, the year before she was hotter than ever. I wonder, are we going to get Rhea back like as popular as like the top male stars?
I hope so. I hope so. I mean, I think Rhea and Liv could be a really big match at some point this year. In fact, I probably get it like if they do Queen of the Ring again or, you know, whatever, that Knight of Champions. But yeah, like the key is she needs a big opponent. And, you know, Bianca obviously would be the one, but she's obviously not going to be around for a long time. Io Sky, you know, she's got that, you know, friendship with her. And at some point they'll split up and have a match, but I don't think that should happen anytime soon. I think there's a lot of momentum there with them as a
next year's WrestleMania at the earliest.
Yeah, that'd be good. That'd be at the earliest. I like the idea of a team of best friends that you're not even hinting at, that, you know, that they're just, they've got each other's back, and, you know, and that I love that story. So, you know, I'd assume probably like, you know, Rhea's, I mean, there's not a lot of depth on that women's side on SmackDown. You know, I don't know who got called up from NXT. So, you know, she'll probably face some of those people, you know, sooner than later. JC got called up. Yeah, that's
JC and her entire crew got called up.
That's a nice TV match.
They attacked Rhea.
Lainey Reed is not quite ready for that. You know, the other two are.
We need sooner than later to get Jada Parker and Lola Vice up there as well.
Yeah, Jada, you know, and you know, even a little bit further down the road, Kaylee Armstrong. And
Kendall Gray.
Kendall Gray, obviously, yeah. Yeah, that's a big one. Big Cat Kita. Yeah, she can stay down. You say Wendy Chu, I just saw, won the Evolve title, and I had no idea. It happened like 2 weeks ago. I was
in
really
her pajamas still?
No, she's like, oh, okay. Serious. She's back to where she was before she signed in WWE, like the whatever, like the Karen Q, was that her name?
I don't remember.
Yeah, she was in ROH, and that, she's basically doing that character. I mean, her name's still Wendy Chu, but kind of rhymes with Karen Q. I think that was her name. I probably got it wrong. Somebody will correct me. But so I was happy for her. Because I was wondering, maybe she was on this cut list. You know, because there's a couple other people in that match that were on the cut list. It was like an 8-woman match for the vacant title that Kendall Gray forfeited. So, JC. Okay. That's a nice first opponent. I mean, who would be the big one that would be like for the next big show? Like,
I mean, probably another match with Jade, I'm assuming.
Yeah. Yeah. Jade, Bailey. Well, I know she's on Raw. Like there's Jordan Grace. I mean, that could be interesting, I suppose, but
Charlotte and Rhea had great matches before.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah. They had the best match at a Mania a couple of years ago. So yeah, that could be a SummerSlam match for sure.
Yeah.
And you could do Rhea and Alexa as a tune up for that too.
Okay. Well, I'll be back into the swing of things with the regular TV next week. So I'll be right back in there, but this was still fun to talk about some of the bigger things coming out of WrestleMania and some of the bigger things going on at AEW. And, you know, I'm pretty excited for Forbidden Door coming to San Jose. Not that that is the best kind of AEW canon show, but I think that's also what I like about it, is it's a little different. And if I get that credential, I'll be running around out there. So just some pretty cool things to look forward to. Backlash is coming up, and, you know, I guess there's going to be like a new AEW pay-per-view in July, supposedly.
Retribution? Is that what it's called?
And we'll see if the Saudi Arabia show happens.
If I hadn't gone to Mania, I would strongly consider coming to San Jose for that Forbidden Door, but I don't think I can do it because my wife says I've gone to the States too much this year.
Yeah, she's against it, man.
Well, at least I took money away this time, so I think she's
happy. Maybe that's your hook. You're like, yeah, well, you know, I have the trip already paid for. Like,
yeah, no, it's not about the money. It's about the time. It's about the time being. I'd love to hang out with you guys for a weekend, but I don't think it's possible. Yeah.
All right, if anyone is coming, let me know. We'll figure some plans out for that weekend. Food, places to hang out and just chit chat, maybe a tour of Big Dave's house. No, I'm not sure about that one, but all right, that is it from here. So for Paul, I am Double G, and thanks to everybody who was hanging out in the chat. All of my faves were in the chat. Yeah. Fernando and
Maria again. That was nice.
Lady B, Ant was in there. We had a new person who I didn't recognize, Ben Grimm, up all night. He had the tidbit on the Zelina thing. I guess she knew, but she wanted to tell her chat that she had gotten released, and probably someone went in there and spoiled it with Sean's news. So he says that's why she got mad.
All right. That's it from here. We'll see you when we see you. Peace out.